special woman's shiur Sunday afternoon in Shara Yichud, two shiurim today and Wednesday, Amitz Hashem. Yom Aleph, Parshas, Tazria Matzora. Oh, Achrimos Kedoshim, sorry. Achrimos Kedoshim. Condition is not working.
What?
It should be working. Okay.
Now it's on.
Okay. So I don't know whose idea this was. I do know, but I won't embarrass them by saying. And certainly was not my idea. And I hope it's a good idea. There's more women here than usually come, so somebody thinks it's a good idea. Shaar HaYichud in Chavis Haldovis is mostly philosophical proofs, and I'll be explaining everything as we go on with the shiur. It's mostly philosophical proofs of Hashem's existence, of the nature of Hashem to a degree, to whatever degree the human mind can grasp the nature of Hashem, and Hashem Echad, the unity of Hashem, what it means to be one. The Chavis Haldovis will explain that it means so much more than one and not two. That's like kid stuff. One and not two. We'll see. Everything will be explained by Bezus Hashem. My game plan is to today give a general overview, to give a picture of what the Chavis Haldovis is trying to do in this Sha'ar. And Amitz Hashem, Wednesday, the second shiur of this special series, I'll be a little more technical and a little more specific, and I'll explain more, Bezus Hashem. I'll be going over really today's points in a more specific, elaborate ofan, a more specific, elaborate way. What? Okay, now, Naschil. When you read the Torah, you read Chamisha Chumshei Torah, so the Torah accepts very matter-of-factly the existence of Hashem, Bereishis Bara Elokim, and it accepts the fact that a person has a neshama, and that the person strives to do Hashem's will. It doesn't, that's just, you know, that's in the Torah, it's just matter-of-factly assumed that way. There's no real philosophical, rational arguments given in the Torah, certainly not even in Chazal. Maybe there's a few statements scattered around the whole Torah Sheba'al Peh here and there, but there's certainly no systematic, rational, philosophical approach or a system of thought about these things. There is a mitzvah of Emunah, that's a mitzvah saseh, and the Chovetz Halvavos holds, as many others do, that the mitzvah is to reach Emunah, Leida Ulahamin, is the way it's put by many Rishonim, to reach a rational certainty in your own mind about Hashem's existence, which L'chora, in Shaar HaYichud, the Chovetz Halvavos does it philosophically, with philosophical proofs, which is a little unfamiliar to us. Our minds don't really work along those lines, if you'll excuse me, unless you have some PhDs there in philosophy. And really, in Shaar HaBechina, as we know, he says, forget Shaar HaYichud. You want to see Hashem and be convinced of Hashem's existence, study the Bria, Right? That's Shar HaBechina, and that's what we've been doing for many, many, many months, Be'ezus Hashem. Study the Bria, and if you're not convinced that there's a creator there, you're irrational. Right? We're the rational ones. The atheists and the scientists who deny Hashem are the irrational ones. That's what Shar HaBechina teaches us. But there's certainly no philosophical, systematic thought in the Torah. Two Sorim in Tanakh really are philosophical treatises, we call it. Iyov discusses Tzadik Viralo, and Koheles discusses very depressing Sefer Koheles, if you ever learned it. It talks about the futility of life, the futility of this world, and it can't seem to make up its mind if it's good, if it's bad, if you want to be alive, you don't want to be alive, if you should be depressed, if you should be optimistic, pessimistic. It's a very, very confusing sefer. Here's what's it. These are the two svarim that are really the philosophy. Iyov, it's interesting, Chazal say never really existed. It's a fiction, many Chazal say. There was never, that's what many, many say in the Gemara, there was never such a person as Iyov. It's just a philosophy book made in story form. And Koheles, Chazal, there was a strong tzad not to, what do we call, I don't know if it's a Christian word or not, canonize it, not to make it part of Tanakh, because it's too confusing, too depressing, too many seeming contradictions. And then Chazal said, you know, you can learn Koheles, learn it, and you'll have a Rebbe, you'll have a Masorah, so let it be part of Tanakh, and we're confident that you'll come out with the last pasuk triumphant, Sof Dover HaKol Nishma, but that's it, because Torah is revelation. It's not reason, it's not philosophy. There was revelation. Klal Yisrael saw Hashem at Matan Torah. V'yadata hayom v'shevosa levavecha ki Hashem hu hu alokim v'shemayim imal v'alorech mitochas einod. And many psukim and dvarim talk about that there was revelation at Matan Torah. And the whole Klal Yisrael, with 3 million people, experienced that revelation. Along came Socrates, Plato, Aristotle, and they introduced, many say that they stole it from Shlomo HaMelech, they introduced philosophical thought and proofs, and they talked about really the nature of Hashem and the nature of the Bria, the nature of existence, form, matter. These are the Greeks, Greek philosophy. Now, Alexander the Great really conquered the East, the Orient also. He conquered the whole world. So by the time when the Muslims took over in that part of the world, they translated all of these works into Arabic. And the Rishonim, starting, I guess, with Rav Sadia Gaon, who wrote the Sefer Emunos Videos, which is really the first, he's not mamish the first, but for all intents and purposes, he was the first to write a philosophy sefer in Hebrew. He didn't read the original Greek writings of Aristotle, Plato, Bechulu. He read Arabic. Arabic was the language. The Chovetz Chabad was written in Arabic. The Rambam's Mor Nebuchim was written in Arabic. I'm not 100% sure about Rav Sadia Gaon, probably also written in Arabic. And so that's what they had. They had the Greek writings, because the Muslims took over and translated everything into Arabic. With Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi, as a glaring exception, most Rishonim, like we're talking about now, the 1100s, the 1200s, the 1300s, most Rishonim held that philosophy and religion are identical. There's no, they're the same. They just use different methods to reach the same conclusions. Religion is anachnami, it's dogmatic, it's an assertion, but it's based on divine revelation, and we have a darn good Masorah to know that that revelation was in front of a heck of a lot of people. It's more logical to believe in Matan Torah and the revelation of Matan Torah than it is to believe that there was a person called George Washington. Many, many more people saw it, many more people experienced it, compared to the amount of people that ever saw George Washington in their lives. Philosophy is a rational demonstration of the realities that were revealed by Matan Torah, that divine revelation gives us. And most Rishonim, with a glaring exception of Yehuda HaLevi, hold that it's pretty much, I don't know, nowadays nobody thinks anymore, so who cares? But they held that philosophy is indispensable. They lived in a tekufa where rational thought, philosophy, made it intelligent, not just dogmatic, even though it was based on Mesorah, but the Chavis Halvavus says explicitly, and you see all the Rishonim that wrote these philosophical works held that the mitzvah of Emunah is to explore with our rational minds, again, Hashem's existence, Hashem's oneness, His unity, His the nature of Hashem, so to speak, justice, good and evil, and Bechira and Yediyah. These are major philosophical issues. The nature of Hashem, Hashem's existence, His unity, the nature of Hashem, and that He acts with justice, rewards good, punishes evil, cares about what happens in the world, and that there could be Bechira and Yediyah concurrent. And so they wrote the Sfarim, and the first Sefer really, which the Chavis Halavos refers to, and the Chavis Halavos doesn't spend much time on this. Shara Yichud is like almost to be Yotze. But he says, read Rav Sadia Gaon. Rav Sadia Gaon, Emunos Videos. You want to have an intelligent grasp of these things that I just mentioned, which to them, again, with the exception of Rav Yehuda HaLevi, was the way to go. No question, that's the way to go. We want to understand things with our rational thought. A man is a rational being. We just are starting to learn in Shara HaBechina that the mind and thought is the greatest gift of all that Hashem has given us. Greater than, right? He goes through all the Devarim, the eye, the nose, the ear, the throat, the teeth, right? He goes through everything. And then he says, but the mind, wow. He says that we could think and we could understand and we know Hashem, like, that's La'ela, La'ela, the greatest gift of all. So Rav Sadia Gaon wrote Emunos Videos, and that was, you know, and then Rabachia came along, Rabachia, as is more commonly known, Rabachia ibn Pekuda, not the Sefer Ben Abachia on Chumash, he lived 2 centuries later, different person. The Chavis Halvavos is Rabachia ibn Pekuda, and he held, he's going to write about Chavis Halavavos. Now, Rabbi Avigdor Miller Zatzal, and I think we should just assume that this is so, he calls it duties of the mind, not of the heart. He says, in all of Tanakh, Lev is the mind, not the heart. Moach, the Rosh, is brain. That's the technical part, the physical part of thought. But the understanding, that's an intangible, right? The brain is a computer. Computer doesn't understand things. Where do you understand things? That's the lev. That's what Avigdor Miller says, and therefore he translates Chavis Halvavos as duties of the mind. And when you read Chavis Halvavos, and you read his Akedama, which we learned once, and you start reading and reading and reading it, obviously he's right. I mean, no question that the Chavis Halvavos is talking mind. The mind means what's in your mind. To know, and Emunah is first, to know that there's Hashem, that He's Echad, that He's unique, that He's incomparable, that He has no components. We're going to talk about these things. And then we serve Hashem, we're Nichna to Hashem, we love Hashem, Shar Avos Hashem, that Hashem cares about what we do for our own sake, not for His sake, for our own sake, and we want to find favor in the eyes of Hashem. And this is, the Chazal says, you have to be convinced of this with your rational, with the rational part of you. And he says all Chochmah has 3 sources, because he doesn't negate Mesorah, because if you can't do it through rational thought, so we have a tradition, we have a Mesorah. And as I said, the Mesorah is very, very strong. But the Chavis Halvavos holds that's, you know, you're not another Mashalim. You're not That's what he held. That's what most of the Rishonim of his time held, of his time, of those three, 4 centuries. Medieval Jewish philosophy, we'll call it. And so he says there's 3 sources for knowledge. Reason, that's the rational mind, reason, R-E-A-S-O-N, reason. The written law, the Torah, and Masorah, which includes Torah Shebaal Peh, and includes all of our Masorah. There was a Maimonides, right? Masorah, we'll call it Torah Shebaal Peh. We'll call it Masorah. Our traditions, what our Rebbeim taught us, all link going back to our Sinai. Really further, it goes back to the Marishon, and there's not that many generations. Josephus talked about Yitzias Mitzrayim as a fact that everybody admitted to and agreed to, and this is Josephus was a historian at the time of the Churban Bayis Sheni, and he, 800 years, 1,000 years after Yitzias Mitzrayim, and it was fact, like George Washington, like nobody's going to say to him, how do you know George Washington? I want you to prove it to me. Because someone made a picture of him. I can make a picture of anybody I want. Okay, and to be an Adam HaSholem, he holds reason. And he holds reason as the strongest of all. Now, it's dangerous. We know that reason is dangerous. We'll see in a moment. I just want to first read. The Chavis HaLovis writes in his Akdoma that the whole Sefer, he writes in an easy style, easy reading. If you know Arabic, I guess. Now you could read the Lev Tov, which is, you have the translator, which is when you go into a store and buy a Chavis HaLovis, you're going to buy a translation from Ibn Tibbon, and Lev Tov is a contemporary work, which is a restatement of the Chavis HaLovis, like word for word, but in easy flowing language, and he throws in interpretation too, makes it easier to read, and Rav Kapach Zatzal wrote again. He went from the original Arabic and wrote it again in Hebrew. Notice he undercut Ibn Tibbon and he retranslated it from the original Arabic, and he was a Yemenite scholar, and he wrote, and that's what I use by the men as I use Rav Kapach's Chavis HaLovis. It's very easy modern Hebrew. So the Chavis HaLovis writes that he tries to write the whole Sefer in easy language, with the exception of Shara Yichud. Thanks a lot. With the exception of Shara Yichud, because the subtlety of the subject, he writes, needs the words of logic and mathematics. And because it's philosophy, and it needs, he doesn't have to use those words. It can't be written in any other way. But the rest of the Sefer, even Rabbi Milinowitz can give a shir on Chavis HaLovis, no problem. But the Shara Yichud is heavy stuff already, and he uses very technical terms. Now, Chavis HaLovis is divided into 10 Sha'arim, and there are 10 principles of how we relate to Hashem. And first and foremost, and most fundamental, is Yichud. Yichud really means the unity of Hashem, because that really describes, as best as we're able to describe, the nature of Hashem. It includes, obviously, the existence of Hashem, but Hashem Echad, because the nature of Hashem and many of the philosophical proofs of Hashem's existence, and that Hashem is the creator of the world, we say, but he's the creator of existence. He's the creator of existence, the creator of time, the creator of really the true sentence to say is the creator of existence. Except we cannot fathom lack of existence. We can't even fathom lack of time. Our human minds cannot grasp time standing still. Because you say, well, how can it stand still? What happens the next second? Right? But Hashem created time and he created existence. So the nature of Hashem, the proofs involve understanding the unity of Hashem. And that he's not... A human mind can only grasp a thing or an event. And Hashem is neither. Hashem is not a thing and he's not an event. So really, we can't grasp Hashem. We can't know We can't really know the nature of Hashem. Chazal say, when you learn Torah, you're gaining knowledge of Hashem to the degree that you can. You're learning what He considers good, what He likes, what He doesn't like. You know, like a Facebook, like, don't like. You know what Hashem likes. He likes 248 things. He doesn't like 365 things. And you're learning Torah, but the Chavos Lavavos, when he then writes Shar HaBechina, because he says Shar Yichud is much too heavy. You want to see Hashem and be convinced that Hashem is real, and being convinced that there's a Creator full of wisdom that makes everything in the world work like clockwork, and it's perfect and it's beautiful and it's complex and it's wisdom and it's chesed. So he wrote Shar HaBechina. He says that's really, you know, if it's too heavy for you, Shar HaYichud, learn Shar HaBechina and you'll see Hashem. Because you really can't know Hashem. You know Hashem by looking at what He created and through learning Torah. And as the philosophers explain, we can talk about what Hashem is not. The last parak in Shar HaYichud is devoted to descriptions of Hashem. And like, how could you describe Hashem as Gadol, Gibor, Nora? How can you say Vayomer Hashem, Vayadaber Hashem, Vayiktsof Hashem? Like what? You just told me things about Hashem that these are impossible. And so he explains in the last parak that that's the only way we have of relating to Him. And one of the things He did when He decided, so to speak, like, and you say when, like, these words really have no meaning, because there's no when, because there was no time. So you can say when Hashem decided, because Hashem's unity would not really allow for any change in Hashem. We'll get to these things. And if there's no change in Hashem, so there was never a point in time when He decided something, because that would be a change. Hashem decided at a certain point in time to do something, but there was no time yet. And the very words imply a change in Hashem, which is impossible. Hashem is objective unity, which we'll explain. One means so much, Chavos Lavavos will explain. Maybe we won't get to it till Wednesday. I'm saying this is just an overview. So the first section is really the philosophical proofs that Hashem exists, and to whatever degree we can grasp the nature of Hashem and Hashem's unity. Then the second section we know is Shar HaBechina, and then he goes through the different Shorim, Avodas Elokim, Bitachon, Yichud HaMaisa, Kniya, Tshuva, Cheshbon HaNefesh, Prishus, and Avos Hashem. The basic... I'm trying to give an overview. That's the basic proof. So Shar HaYichud is philosophical proof to the existence of Hashem and to the unity of Hashem. And it defines the degree of unity. What does it mean, one? Hashem is one. And he follows the method of Rav Sadia Gaon, really. He proves that the world had to be created. And if it had to be created, there's a creator. And that's the first cause, because at some point you're going to have to come to the first cause, right? They never tell you that in school, that, you know, what brought that about. What the Rebbeinu Bechaya does in Chavos Lavavos, which Rav Sadia Gaon did not do, is describe the nature of Hashem Echad, that it's a unity, like, much more than when you say I have one pen in my pocket. That's kid stuff. Of course there's one Hashem. He proves that also, but one means unique, and one means no composite, and one means you can't talk about Hashem and his, to quote the Rishonim, Hu v'chachmaso u'ritzono echad. You can't talk about Hashem's will. There's nothing that's outside of Hashem. I'm me, and I have a will. And that's like two different things. I am not my will. My will is not I. Kadosh Baruch Hu, he shows, part of Echad is that he's totally one, no composites whatsoever. So, Hu v'chachmaso Echad, his will, it's all emanations of Hashem, and it's all Hashem. That's why Chazal will imply, although we won't say it to Farish, that nothing in the world really exists. We're all figments of Hashem's imagination. I don't want to scare you. Right? You say, oh, what do I do if Hashem wakes up? Am I going to disappear? Like your kid wants to know when he wakes up from a dream, like, where'd everybody go? If Hashem ever wakes up, we're goners. That's the Rambam really puts it down more explicitly. He says, everybody okay? The Rambam really puts it down more explicitly. The Rambam says the only objective existence is Hashem. Everything else is a product of Hashem's will and is subject to Hashem wanting it, because Hashem is everything. So this is a product of Hashem's will, and this is a product of Hashem's will. And if you never stop willing that it be, it would just stop being. Not it would break, or it would collapse, or it would, wouldn't even disappear. This feels like a magic trick. It would stop being, because the Rambam says, and we say this in Kriya Shema, when we say Hashem Elokeichem, and we hear the word Emes, and it's a paraphrase of the pasuk Hashem Elokim Emes. So the Rambam says Emes means that's the only objective existence. That's the only thing that objectively must exist by definition. Nothing else, everything else is subjective, and it's subject to Hashem's will. That's what it's subjective to. So everything is dependent, and that means, though, that everything is products of Hashem's will. And that's it. Everything's a product of His will. And you walk around with that, and then you start wondering, so how could I have Bechira? So we're not going there today. But that's heavy. Very, very heavy. If you appreciate what Hashem Echad means, that He is the only thing that really exists, and everything is a product of His will. That's, you see, if you ask me about Bechir and Yediyah, I'd say, what's the problem? But that's because I don't really understand the nature. And Hashem's Yediyah is not, as the Mefarshim say on the famous Rambam, that raises the issue and then says, forget about it, you'll never understand it, because Hashem's knowledge is not our knowledge. We know things, and we know facts. We know things that are. Hashem's knowledge is part of Him. So it just encompasses the whole Bria, it encompasses all of time. It's embedded in what Hashem is. Our minds can't grasp it, so don't even bother. I can say the words. But that's what Ben Elchai is distinctive in describing Hashem's unity, which Rav Sadia Gaon did not do. The Chavis Al-Bavis is very candid that he can't prove Hashem's existence as a mathematical 2 plus 2 equals 4, and that's like absolute, certain. He says he can't. It can't be proven. It can't be proven on that level, like mathematics. Because anything my mind understands, another mind can come along and refute. He's very candid about that. And that is why Rabbi Yehuda Halevi says, forget it, it's too dangerous. You're going to raise questions, people are going to give answers, but then other people will come and refute the answers, and you're not going to be happy, and who knows what's going to go on in your mind. Just stay away from the whole thing, and we have a Mesoros, and that's all. Fold your hands and say, you know, Emuna, I have Emuna. And that's what Rabbi Yehuda Halevi recommends. Chavis Al-Bavis doesn't go for that. But he says, I can't prove it mathematically, mamish. I can convince you. You can be convinced of something. That's the best I'll do. You'll follow my proofs. If you understand them, good. And he writes, I'm not here to change the mind of an atheist. I won't change the mind of an atheist. An atheist wants to be an atheist. I won't change the mind of someone who doesn't understand what I'm talking about. That's me. But he says, I won't. I wrote this shar for someone who has a tradition and believes in the tradition and wants more and is capable of more, and it's really to reinforce, that's what he writes, it's really to reinforce the tradition that we have. And you have to try. It's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to know that Hashem exists, to know that the tradition is true as much as you're able to. So he says people who understand should use the book as a reminder. People who are atheists or don't understand the book, just close it or go on to the next shiur if you want. Or people who want more, they're mavakshim, and they do understand, but they want to understand better. Okay, they'll benefit the most from the book. Although I cannot, as I say, they have to be, I can convince them that rationally it's supremely logical and convincing that it's true. But he says, I'm not going to give you mathematical proof, and if that's what you want, turn the page and go on. Can't be done. Because we're dealing with an intangible, right? Right? But I'll prove it to you as much as we believe that George Washington existed. That I'll do. He doesn't say that, by the way. He didn't know George Washington would exist. I want to tell you a Rambam in Moreh Nevuchim. The Rambam, who really appealed to rational thought, writes as follows, and I'm reading from a translation. At times, and this is very, it's a big yesod, at times the truth shines so brilliantly that you perceive it as clear as day. In other words, you're going to learn proofs and you're going to say, wow, this is MS, wow. But then the nature of a person and the nature of the Bria, really, is that darkness descends and we have our moments of doubt, and it's as if Hashem drew a veil over our perception and we're in a darkness, and it's like someone who has frequent flashes of light and then finds himself or herself in the darkness of night. And you just, the Rambam writes, you know, so you know it's true because you remember. I saw a beautiful marshal someone wrote, beautiful marshal of a man and wife. You know, sometimes it clicks. I don't want to hear your tzaras now, but once in a while it clicks and you know why you married this guy, and it's great, and you're in seventh heaven, and you remember getting engaged, and you remember standing under the chuppah, and you just know that this is the second half of your neshama. And then that's the light. And then there's darkness. You're yelling at each other, maybe you're even calling each other names. It happens. And you're talking about, you remember, and you start remembering things he did 2.5 years ago. And I never liked your mother. And all of a sudden it's like that. So what do? You want to have a good marriage. You want to access the moments of truth. You want to access standing under the chuppah. You want to access, you know there were times when you felt that this is the second half of your neshama. So you wait for that to reappear. You know, you got to tread water and you got to get over. You don't go below a certain red line. That's why halacha is very, very good, because it creates red lines, right? A husband has certain obligations to his wife. A wife has certain obligations to the husband. So halacha creates red lines, so it can't ever dip below the red line. And you have faith. What am I talking about? I'm talking about women who stop going to the mikveh, who stop serving supper, men who stop giving their wives money in order to buy things for the house. That's below a red line. That's why halacha is so valuable, even though at times halacha seems very rigid and not romantic. If you learn Maseches Ksubis, it's like there's a business deal, two people getting married. Everybody's putting their assets on the table, discussing money, 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 money. Chazal were very wise, and they created red lines because they know that there's romance. And two people get married because they feel, usually, that they're two halves of a neshama. And sometimes it breaks down, and you're not there anymore, and there's darkness descends. To use the Rambam's lashon, darkness descends. But you know that there's light. You know that there's moments of you know what it's like, and you just wait for them to reappear. And that's what keeps a marriage stable. What I'm hearing is that the halacha sees to it, because it could easily, right, when you're angry and you have tinnitus to your husband, always unjustifiably. That's why I never let my wife speak to you, because she might say what I act like. I don't want to let that happen. But really, that's what the halacha does. That's the beauty of the unromantic halacha. Halacha is very unromantic. Maseches Ksubos and Kiddushin is very unromantic. It's very legal and technical because it's creating red lines. That's what I believe. This is my opinion about the pshat in that. Romance is personal. They're creating red lines, but that's a marshal. It's a beautiful, beautiful marshal. I love the marshal. And that's what the Rambam is saying about Hashem. You'll have your moments of clarity, your moments when Hashem is like right here. Wow. Wow. And then there's darkness because life is bumpy and sometimes you're just not in the mood and you're just Nistara Darkime Hashem, Klal Yisrael says, the Navi says. And just there's darkness. Darkness descends. And you have to have Emuna. That's when you fall back on Mesorah. You fall back on Emuna. And we know that Hashem only does good, etc., etc. I won't go into that now. I don't want to get sidetracked. But you maintain your Emuna for those moments of light. So that's what the Chavis HaLava says too. You know, I can't... You're going to have your moments of doubt, even, perhaps. But there's red lines. You're going to make a bracha anyway. You're going to eat kosher anyway. You're going to keep Shabbos anyway. That's the unromantic part, right? You're going to do it. And then you're going to climb back to those moments of light. I thought I would have time, but I don't. Although this goes through the first paragraph of Shema Yisrael, V'yohavto Eis Hashem Elokecha, and he shows 10 principles that the first paragraph, this is what he does in the first parak of Shara Yichur. I'm giving you an overview of Shara Yichur. The first parak presents us with the best way to accept Hashem's oneness. There's a hakdama to the Shara Yichud in which he goes through the first paragraph of Shema and he shows 10 points of Hashem's existence. Hashem is Elokeinu. We have a personal relationship with Hashem, every one of us. Hashem Echad, Avas Hashem, Chol Lebav V'chol V'chol Nafshecha V'chol Miyodecha. You have to think about Hashem. V'hayu Hadvarim O'el Hashem Anochim Tzadcha Hayom Al Lebavecha. Shvisa Hashem L'negdi Somen. He's a constant presence in your life. Then there's 5 mitzvahs: mezuzah, tefillin, learning Torah, teaching Torah. That's what he says in the Hakdama. And he says there's 10 principles there, and that's why I'm going to explain Hashem's oneness in 10 chapters. Beautiful, right? So although this sometimes gets mystical on us, because he's not just playing games with numbers. He's saying there's 10 prokim in Shar HaYichud, and it's keneged because I see this 10 principles in the first paragraph of Shema, and I'm going to write there for 10 chapters about in Shar HaYichud. The first chapter tells us the best way to understand Hashem's oneness by grasping the proofs of His existence and knowing the truth of it on our own. And again, knowing the truth means being convinced, which is pretty good. I'm convinced. That's the first parak. The second parak says, you could say Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad in 4 ways. You can say the words and not have any conviction, not be convinced that it's true. You can have a conviction based on Mesorah. You can have a conviction based on knowledge, but you don't understand what Echad means. To you it just means one and not two. You don't understand the meaning of objective unity, which he spends time explaining. And the fourth madrega is that you have knowledge of Hashem and of His unity, what unity means, and that's obviously the best way. That's in Perek Beis. Perek Gimel reintroduces, because he's like talking to a person, and he says, maybe I should just forget the whole thing and just depend on the Mesorah. I'm scared. I'm scared. So he says, no, if you're an intelligent person, and again, we might not be called intelligent. You are, not me. But, see, he lived in a world of philosophy where it meant it would reveal truth. And people were Osig and Aristotle, and they talked about it, and it was the truth of the Bria. Now everybody just wants to eat pizza and listen to music and enjoy themselves. And so we're living in a hedonistic world. People don't think about eternal truths. They're a klal. The people in this room obviously do. You came. But really, but we, whoever's idea was to learn this, we're going back in time when philosophy ruled. So Rabbi Yehuda Halevi said, don't go there. Don't go there. It's too dangerous. Stick with Emunah. But all the other Rishonim said, no, we're going to take the Greek Chachma, which was now translated into Arabic, where they lived and they dealt with. There are Mefarshim and Nach that point to Psukim and Malachim that say it's really from Shlomo HaMelech. We're not talking about a Goyish made up thing. We're talking about Chachma Satorah that the Greeks stole. Aristotle lived around the time of Yirmiyahu HaNavi, by the way, if you want to just date these people. So in Perek Gimel he says, no, you got to do it, and you got my three ways. You have reason, psukim, and Masorah. What's funny about Perek Gimel is that he doesn't just say it that it's reason. He said it, he points to psukim also, that you have to use reason. We would have liked him maybe in Perek Gimel to say a rational reason why you have to use reason. But he uses all three pillars of wisdom. Reason, and Psukim, and Masorah. All to tell me that I have to use reason to be convinced of Hashem. The fourth parak tells us how to establish Hashem's oneness, Shara Yichud. First you have to establish that there is a Borei Olam, that there's a first cause who created everything. Then you have to understand why it's muchrach, why it's necessary to understand that he's one, and what that one means. And then the third thing he says, this is in the fourth parak, to understand the nature of one. One means so much more than one and not two. It means a lot. It means everything. It means unique. It means no components. It means no change. The fifth parak proves the existence of a creator. And there's philosophical ways to prove this. Basically, nothing can create itself. That's step one. Step two is the world has to be finite. When they teach you in school that a line has infinite points, it's wrong. It's wrong. It's sheker. That's Zeno's paradox, if you're familiar with it. A line cannot have infinite points. Because if it had infinite points, then the whole line couldn't be finite. It couldn't. We call it infinite points because our minds don't grasp the smallness of a point on the line. So you could just keep adding points. Just like time, we think of time as infinite. But it's not. We know it's a Bria. We know it had a beginning. And it has an end. Not much like a line. And that's Zeno's paradox, which really proves that it doesn't really have infinite points. Or else you couldn't transverse the line. So that's, nothing can create itself. There had to be a beginning, because the world has to be finite, because nothing could be infinite. The Bria can't be infinite. And that all composites, all things that are composites, sorry if I'm mispronouncing it, please try not to laugh at me, all things that are composites have to have been created. Nothing springs up as a composite. It has to spring up as the part, and then you have the composite. So, and then he shows that the whole world is composites. Nothing is unity. Everything is made up of other things. Everything in the Bria is made, and even now with the most advanced physics and quarks and who knows what they have, everything is made up of other things. So Chavis got it right. That's what he does in Perek Chamishi. The sixth Perek. So the fifth parak proves that a creator exists. The sixth parak proves that there has to be a creator. But okay, I can't go into the pratim now. Mitzvah Shem Wednesday will be a little more specific, hopefully. In the seventh parak, he talks about unity. Hashem Echad, that there's only one creator, and he gives seven proofs. I won't go through them now. He gives seven proofs in Perek Zion that there's only one. Again, these are philosophical proofs. In the eighth Perek, he explains what one means, the nature of one. It's not circumstantially one. Those are the words he uses would be in English. It's true, or I would say objective oneness, which means so much. It means no change. It means no composites. It means there's nothing outside of him. He is everything. That's why the world has to be, because nothing can exist outside of Hashem, because he is the only thing that exists. So everything is just his will. And he, his hu uritzono echad, because Hashem is not made up of composites. So there's no Hashem and his will. It's all Hashem. So everything, I mean, everything's really holy. Everything is really Hashem. But the shtender has no kedusha to it. But a sefer Torah does. And if I would say about the shtender, harezu muktosh l'Hashem, it would become kadosh. But everything has sparks of holiness. Because everything's Hashem. It's just hidden. Sometimes it's hidden in a way that I don't have to relate. I should relate to the shtender as Hashem, in the sense that there's Baal Tashchis, I shouldn't waste the shtender. I should use it to serve him. I shouldn't use it to rebel against Hashem. That's the height of chutzpah, because this is him. This is his will. He wants the shtender to be. How can I use it against him? Okay, but that's what Perek 8. Perek Ches is about explaining the objective that Hashem is not one circumstantially, but he's one inherently, objectively, truly. In the ninth Perek, he proves that nothing else could have that degree of oneness. Nothing else does, and nothing else can. And if you don't have a headache yet, in the final, in the tenth Perek, Rabbi Nebuchadnezzar talks about all those psukim that talks about Hashem doing things in time, right? Hashem getting angry, Hashem being a gibor, Hashem calming down, Hashem changing his mind, right? It's like, what gives? You just told me that these words are empty words regarding Hashem. How can you talk about these things? So he talks about in Perek 10 why the Torah has to resort to such terminology if a human being with his finite mind is going to at all be able to relate to Hashem. So it's a lowering, so to speak, of Hashem, but that's part of his greatness in chesed. His chesed enabled him, his chesed required of him, so to speak, because he's tov. He is tov. He didn't decide to be tov. So to be meitiv, to create a world which will benefit by being dovek b'Hashem. But Hashem is fine. Like the guy says, I don't want to get married. I'm fine as it is, right? It's a terrible mashal, because a person really does have to get married, and Hashem didn't need anything, doesn't need anything by definition, right? So it's just a chesed that he created creations which can become part of him through their work. And that's, we toil and we deserve to be dovek b'Hashem. So Hashem created that, so we have to be able to relate to Hashem. So everything is just a figure of speech. Hashem said, Hashem got angry, Hashem this and Hashem that are just figures of speech. That's the 10th Perek, and that's it. I hope you got something out of today. I know I did, and we'll continue Mitzvah Hashem Wednesday. We'll see. Wednesday will be more, so you'll listen to the tape.